Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano. We appreciate you listening. I'm distracted here for a minute. I'm trying to find out where this noise is coming from. Evidently, I've turned on this laptop on a video, and the sound's coming out, so it made me think I'm hearing voices there.
I couldn't hear it, so it was just probably.
Well, then
just...
I wasn't. Well, then I could have been hearing voices. Well, you didn't hear it.
I didn't hear anything, okay, but it might be just from laptop.
I think it turned it off. We've got a laptop here in front of us so we can keep up with what's going on in the world.
Like I want to do more of that.
Or if we get bored with one another, we can just start reading the internet and just ignore.
That their internet.
All right, a lot to talk about on the program. What did you think about, by the way, Abe Hamilton joining us. Good morning, Abe.
Good morning.
Public policy analyst for American Family Association and king of AFR radio. He's taken over now.
No.
We had a coup.
He's kudzu.
He's everywhere.
Yeah,
he's everywhere.
He's on Urban Family. Urban. He's constantly.
Brian Fisher show, Focal Point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Took over 2 hours yesterday.
Of course, we didn't tell him this would happen when we hired him.
No,
in January.
No, we didn't.
He was probably just thinking, man, I'll just be able to think and
write.
And yeah.
Then we said, no, you're going to do radio all day, every day. So we had Bishop Jackson on, B.E.W. Jackson.
Oh, I love him.
Yeah, isn't he good?
Oh,
he wrote a column how the Democrat Party has destroyed the black family.
And we're asking community,
about that. The black community, and that was a very provocative title, I told him. But he was talking about what's happened since the 60s. And, you know, you've talked about before yourself. You think that's reversible, Abe? He said in the 60s, 75% of African-American children were born with a mom and a dad.
And raised.
And raised with a mom and a dad. He said that's reversed now. And he blames it on the welfare that was introduced in the 60s. The Great Society.
Yeah, the war against
actually
poverty.
Worked in to the detriment when it was supposed to be, if you believe, give the benefit of the doubt to the people who created it, that they had good intentions.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That it was supposed to be a helps, you know, a hand up, and then it became a handout, so to speak, and it hurt the black. You think that's reversible? You think we can?
I do think it's reversible.
Okay.
But my basis is not political. I think it's reversible because I believe conservative ideology and conservative principles have an advantage position to be able to reach into inner city communities because of the gospel. I think if a genuine effort to engage communities that have been literally obliterated by welfare policies, if the gospel presentation is made successfully, I think that can be accompanied subsequently by political orientation. Because the thing that led to the large swath reversal in black families and black communities to be so allegiant, to have such allegiance to the Democrat Party, was an overture in relationship, not in policies. You know, they made black people feel like they cared, and it ended up resulting in that allegiance. And you think that, you know, the black family survived slavery, survived Jim Crow, survived segregation, intact family units.
Right.
But the welfare system and the welfare state has done with none of those entities have been able to do to the black family. It's diabolical.
Bishop Jackson was pointing out that he had, you know, great, you know, all the way back, who raised intact families and it following, you know, during Reconstruction, Reconstruction and the Ku Klux Klan and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They survived and they prospered. Obviously, as Tim points out a lot, under honest to goodness oppression, you know, in the Jim Crow South, following, you know, the collapse of the slavery economy in the South after the Civil War. So, it's God's design for the family to be that most basic and therefore most critical unit in any society. And I think that what has happened, and you know, I'm not obviously the first to say this, but I think the progressive mentality of the government and its quote-unquote experts can solve not only solve all our problems, but needs to direct every activity that we do, that has resulted. That was the foundational, the core ideology of the Great Society. Mm-hmm. So government will come to your rescue. We will erase poverty. And obviously, as Tim said, we give the benefit of the doubt to some of those. I'm guessing that they had a heart of compassion for people who were trapped in cycles of poverty and deprivation. But
some of them.
But you've got to do things God's way.
Yep.
And if you elevate the state to a place that replaces God mm-hmm. and His design for human endeavors and human societies, you're going to fail. The only way to reverse it is to swap back.
Yep.
And that might only come through a massive awakening, and not just in the Black community, but nationwide.
You nailed it. We cannot achieve godly results by circumventing God's processes.
Right.
Won't happen. And so the hope for reversing it is the same hope we have for the society, American society at large,
yes.
is submitting once again to our Lord. And it's starting to happen because you have people like Bishop Jackson, and you
yes.
have, you know, Urban Family, you have, you know, Lonnie Poindexter's, and you have more people who are appearing all over the country, which 5 years ago, 10 years ago, you didn't have as many people in the Black community that are speaking out. And there's some who are admitting, man, we've been, you know, voting 90%+ for Democrats, and look what's happened to us. So some,
right.
it's happening. The waking up is happening. But
well, as you said, Abe, earlier, we've been talking about the political. A lot of people, including Bishop Jackson, says that the Democrat Party has used Black folks.
Yes.
Now you can be used. Sometimes you can be used unknowingly, and other times you go along with it.
Yeah, you make a deal.
I think a lot. Quite frankly, I think a lot of the leaders, so called, in the Black community, they know the story, but they're smart enough to know what's going on. But they benefit financially from it. So what I'm saying is, but that's the politics of it. What Abe's talking about, politics of it, yes, but the spiritual part of it is going to have to come first.
It has to.
So we're going to have to see more ministers, for example, in the Black community call on a newfound respect for marriage and family. Mm. You know what? I was thinking about this the other day, and again, this is just me talking, 53-year-old white dude, but I have
brother in Christ.
But I have feelings too. You know what I'm saying? I may be 53 and I may be white, but I matter. But
oh,
why are you laughing at me?
Because you started off saying something serious. Now you're
okay.
Talking
I'll
about,
get back to serious.
Now you're talking about how you
I'll
have
get back
feelings.
To
too.
Well, you're usually discredited when you're a white person. And you talk about issues that affect the Black family. So then they say, "Well, you're not. How do you know?"
Right.
You know. So I'm just saying. I think what I'm about to say, which I hope I don't forget, matters. And that is, I haven't heard, you rarely hear today, Black folks say, "I'm going to a wedding," much anymore, because, you know what I'm saying? It just, the institution of marriage needs to be reinforced again in the African-American community. I was reading these statistics here. Among we've got in our country, and this isn't why we had Abe on, but
right.
what Bishop Jackson was talking about, to getting back to Abe's point about we need a spiritual awakening. Well, we need a spiritual awakening among Americans in general.
Yeah. yeah.
Okay, but not just, but you've got, you know, you've got 72% of African-American children born out of wedlock. You've got in Hispanic community, which is the largest minority now.
Mm-hmm.
53%.
Yep.
Born out of wedlock. Now the white number is still down 29.4%.
But it's higher than it used to be.
It is. It's growing.
It's growing exponentially.
You start getting, because the whites represent what, 60% of the country?
Yep,
probably something like that.
65% of the country.
Mm-hmm.
If you start getting the white numbers up in the 40s, for example, if that were to happen, it would be devastating. I mean, then you would see the same, because it doesn't matter what color skin you are, if you have the same, if the same things would happen in either the blacks or the whites or the, if you have the same things happen in the breakdown of the family.
Well, that's what Bishop Jackson said in his fine blog, which we want to point out again,
right,
is on Today's Issues Facebook page. He said, this is great. I'm gonna use this quote.
Who said this?
This is Bishop Jackson. He said, a father and mother raising children is not a racial idea.
Not.
Yeah, it's not. That's not right. A white thing.
It's not.
It's God's idea.
It's God's idea.
That's exactly
for
right.
All people.
Yeah. All right, that isn't why we had you on, but Bishop Jackson was on prior to you, Abe. That's why we wanted to get you to comment on it. Okay, while we did have you on, in addition to being king of AFR and public policy analyst for American Family Association and a constitutional attorney, we want to ask you about this. Okay. There's a story in the news about the American Bar Association. Now, the American Bar Association has a different meaning in a country song. But for our purpose, for our purposes here today, it's the official group that represents law. That what will they credential lawyers? What do they
do? No, they don't credential lawyers. It's an association of lawyers that, you know, when you affiliate yourself with them, you get certain benefits, whatever, and
it's
perks.
It's a professional.
It's a professional organization for lawyers.
Not all lawyers join.
Not all lawyers
join. But you pay your dues
right
annually, and you join the American Bar Association. It's rather prestigious in the minds of many. And it also, you get the magazine.
You get
right?
the magazine.
At home once a year. So the American Bar Association, but they are influential. They are influential.
They often serve as a think tank to provide model rules. They sometimes present other things that other states, legislatures, and whoever adopt in order to, you know, change policy.
So what have they done?
In this instance, the American Bar Association has, they always promulgate model ethics rules. And so in promulgating those model ethics rules, they use their influence to be the heavy, so to speak, on state bar associations to get them to adopt the rules. In order for the ABA recommendations to take effect, the state bars have to adopt them. Well, they have proposed an amendment to their ethics rules that is, in effect, a speech code. They've promulgated a speech code that would now suggest that any harmful verbal or physical conduct that manifests bias or prejudice towards others would be an ethics violation. They then go on to define harassment as, quote, derogatory or demeaning verbal or physical contact. I'm sorry, physical conduct. I said contact. Let me read that again. Derogatory or demeaning verbal or physical conduct. The rule would not only apply to courtroom conduct, but it would also be extended to participation in any bar association, business, or social activity in connection with the practice of law. So what you have is that the ABA is now providing a speech code similar to what lots of colleges have attempted to adopt.
Right.
That's been a subject of lots and lots of litigation that will basically become the thought police for lawyers. Just in case you're wondering what kind of harmful or biased speech it would be, I don't know, something like homosexual marriage shouldn't be a right protected by the Constitution, or something that may suggest that Islamic jihad is something that we need to address as a nation. You can go on and get an idea of the types of things that would be considered harmful or demeaning or biased, and this ethical rule that would govern all lawyers if they were adopted under whatever jurisdiction would extend not only to courtroom conduct, but even to social activities.
So you're now you're an attorney.
I am.
So if you're at lunch, let's say you and I, let's say you buy me lunch at De Casa, which I'm open to, the local Mexican restaurant up the street, and we're having a conversation. Mm-hmm. And let's say the Mississippi Bar Association, which can punish lawyers, mm-hmm. let's say it has adopted the ABA's policy recommendation. Somebody overhears you. Just mm-hmm. overhears you talking mm-hmm. to me mm-hmm. and saying something about Islam, radical Islam.
Mm-hmm.
If they report you to the Mississippi Bar, you could be in trouble with that organization,
mm-hmm.
and then you have to spend thousands of dollars to clear your name so that you can practice law in this state.
That's exactly right. And The reality is this is the same type of speech code that has been defeated time after time after time in court. But the issue is, as often is the case, the threat is what they're going for here. And almost all lawyers know part of the way that lawyers remain viable in the practice of law is by avoiding ethics violations. I mean, how right. often have you heard the jokes about lawyers and corruption?
Right.
Well, if any lawyer is flagged with having an ethics complaint on their name, those things are tracked. People check that out. You could effectively destroy a legal career based on a spurious, non-founded claim. Even if I prevail, having that ethics violation ruled as being inadequate or insufficient, I still have the mark of having a complaint made against me. That could potentially have clients saying, I don't want to deal with this Abraham guy because he has ethics violations on his record.
Well, now let me ask you this, okay, because I'm going to start off with what I think I can understand mm-hmm. about the importance of having attorneys and judges give the appearance of not being biased. Mm-hmm. So I can see where the American Bar Association and all these legal organizations say, look, people have to believe that you're not biased. But going after speech codes, I think, is kind of a bizarre way, because if I don't ever say anything unbiased, that doesn't prove I'm not biased.
That's exactly right.
In my heart, I can still be biased just because I don't say anything. So at some point, you have to trust your lawyers, and the way you decide whether a lawyer or a judge is biased has to be by their actions.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
By their actions, things that are on the record. That seems to me to be the only way you can really adequately and fairly judge whether a person is biased, because just because someone doesn't say anything doesn't mean they don't have bias in their heart, which can come out, for example, in a judge's decisions.
And let me add this to the discussion. The appearance of a lack of bias should be limited to those in the judiciary, because when you have lawyers, we are by nature advocates. So we are by nature required to maintain certain biases in order to advocate for certain positions. Let's think, I don't know, like maybe advocating for the sanctity of natural marriage.
Right.
I would have to be able to make what may be perceived in the eyes of other lawyers, a biased argument. And not only to add that the ABA's model rule proposes that their proposed catch-all is, well, if it's in the context of legitimate advice and advocacy, well, excuse me, I don't want any governmental entity or bar association determining for me as a lawyer what is a legitimate legal argument.
Right.
I mean, this is ridiculous.
I mean, they don't expect this kind of unbiased speech at dinner parties out of lawyers who are associated with the American Civil Liberties Union. I mean, you're going to go to a dinner party with a bunch of ACLU lawyers. You're going to hear a liberal perspective being discussed.
And think about this. At continuing legal education seminars, they're often are presentations made, by David French, other people, Alliance Defending Freedom, others, that discuss navigating certain laws that support certain causes. This would be an attempt to silence that.
I want to talk. We're talking to Abe Hamilton. Abe is public policy analyst for the American Family Association, and Abe, with Ed and yours truly, Tim, we've been talking about the American Bar Association, which is a very prestigious in many people's minds professional association for lawyers across America, and they've got a new speech code they put into. They've adopted this, right?
The ABA has adopted it. So what they're trying to do is to weigh in on state bar associations to adopt it in order to make it effective.
So if an attorney gets disbarred, that's with the state
with the state bar association, okay. Not with the American.
All right, let me ask you this. This is just part of the overall PC movement in America, political correctness that's going on in our country. Ed talked about this last hour. You weren't with us at Princeton University. They want to get rid of the words man and woman. And really?
Yes. I'm not kidding.
Yeah. And this is a
smart school,
an Ivy League school. Here we're talking about the American Bar. By the way, let me just say this. Classic liberalism used to support free speech all over the place.
Right.
I mean, they used to be for the give and take of ideas, and they were staunchly against censorship. That is the ACLU types and those people. And now, ironically, the quote liberal movement, which has been redefined as the progressive movement, they are in favor of censorship of speech and changing and intimidating people on speech. So it's not, you know, they're not liberal anymore on free speech.
Well, I think their views... their views really haven't changed. It's just they're at the top of the food chain.
Now. Okay, now they can control.
Now they can.
Power corrupts.
Yeah.
You know, I was watching a special on a few months ago on, how long do we have here? Okay,
about
we got
four
enough,
minutes.
We got enough
three,
time
3 minutes.
To, we got enough time to develop this. But it was a special on how the rise of the Third Reich in Germany.
Right.
And what Hitler and his Nazi party did was to create a control of the thoughts and the verbiage and the ideas of the people by promoting propaganda. And now in that day, you didn't have the internet, obviously, and they could wall off foreign print, mm-hmm. for example, that
right.
might come in to say, hey, what your government's telling you is not necessarily true. Mm-hmm. So it was a different era. But nonetheless, Hitler used, and the Nazis, they used propaganda to change people's views. And so the German people began to accept everything that they said. And then they were raising the little children to believe the party line. And so nobody questioned it. And so that's how the Third Reich was created. And you go, well, how could people do those kind of monstrous, evil things to other people? Well, they thought they were doing righteous work of Hitler and the Aryan race and the Third Reich. What I'm saying is, and now we don't have, it's not Hitler, what's going on in our culture with the PC movement, propaganda-wise, is akin to what you see in communist countries or the Nazis or state-controlled messaging. You see what I'm saying?
And this is a great example of that.
You understand what I'm saying?
Propaganda is propaganda.
The propaganda. Yeah. And the propaganda of the PC movement, as we discussed here today, is trying to condition the American mind to think things that that are against God, mm-hmm. that are against our Constitution, mm-hmm. that are against common sense.
Yep.
And so we're having to contend with this.
Yeah, and the thing is this, and I'm going to read this, but as with many speech codes, actual enforcement isn't the point. This more than likely won't be enforceable, but it's about the fear of enforcement, the chilling effect. It's about creating the impression that certain ideas are completely out of bounds, specifically any idea or expression that offends favorite victim groups. And this extending to social activity will likely, if adopted, have the effect of lawyers, dare I say Christian thought, being silenced from the public discourse. And that's the result of this kind of stuff.
Well, Abe, thanks for commenting on it. I know a lot of conservative lawyers are going to fight back against this.
Oh, yeah.
And Ed, thanks for sitting in.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
With me today. What's today? Thursday.
Thursday. You know
Thursday.
What that means.
That means tomorrow. Learning University.
Trivia Friday.
Is on the air.
We need to have Abe on sometimes because he's not on the radio enough.
We could. Abe's pretty smart. We'll make him smarterer.
Smarterer, more betterer.
More betterer, as Ed likes to say. Have a great day, everybody. Keep listening to American Family Radio, and we'll see you next time.